Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Thanks for joining us today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Tara, we have a special guest today that I cannot wait to hear her story. But when I think of this family, I think of Jeremiah 29:11. Where the Lord said to Jeremiah, I know the plans I have for you. So they're going to be unconventional, right? And plans to prosper you, to give you a hope, and to give you a future. I just think that's a beautiful picture of what's gone on with John and Carly Susan, how God has built their family.
Yeah, so welcome, Carly.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here today.
We're really excited to have you. And when Lynette was telling me about you and your family, I just couldn't wait to get started. So you and John have a very unconventional story, and it all began, as it does with each of us, is that you were newlyweds, but as newlyweds, you did something a little bit different. So why don't you share your story with us?
Yeah, so I have known since I was in the second grade that I wanted to adopt one day. There was a girl in my second grade class that was adopted, and I just thought it was awesome that her parents chose her. So from a very early age, that was something that was important to me. So when John and I started seriously dating, I said to him, hey, it's on my heart to adopt one day. So if you're on board with that, like, then we can move forward in this relationship. And if you're not on board, then, well, you're not the guy for me. So he said he was not by any means opposed to the idea. He hadn't thought about it very much, but he was okay to talk about pursuing it. So we got married in March of 2008. We just celebrated our 10-year anniversary last week, which is a super huge accomplishment. And it was an awesome celebration and a great experience. And so when we got married, we had talked about one day in the future adopting. We thought we would spend some time, just the two of us, getting to know each other and getting settled for a little while before either trying to pursue adoption or have biological children. And really just a few weeks after we got married, we were sitting in church and the pastor was doing announcements, and they had just partnered up with a local organization called Foster Connect, who had partnered with the local Department of Family Services to try and spread the word to the faith-based community in Las Vegas that we were really desperate for foster parents. So they put out this call to try and recruit families. As we left church that day, John and I were kind of like, well, foster care, like, we've talked about adoption for a long time, but we've never talked about foster care. And, you know, like, is this something God is calling us to do? And so we kind of like put the idea aside. And over the next like 2 weeks, God separately confirmed for both of us that it was what we were supposed to do. So we came back together and we talked about it, and we felt like, well, we just got married, but generally speaking, the licensing process to become a foster parent is an incredibly long process. So we thought we've got at least 6, probably closer to 12 months before we would actually get a child placed in our home. So we thought, well, you know, let's start the process. And by the time we get a kid, we will have had a little bit of marriage under our belt. And the county was so desperate that the only time ever in the history of Department of Family Services in Clark County, they condensed 10 weeks of training down to 2 weekends.
Oh my goodness.
So yeah, we went into this like just saying, yes, God, we're ready to do whatever it is that you have for us. And less than 5 months from the day we were married, we brought home a sibling group of 4.
Whoa.
Yeah, and that was not by any means what we had anticipated or what we expected to happen in this process, but that's what God had for us.
So, how old were the kids, Carly?
At the time that we brought them home, they were 7 months, 2, 3, and 5, and they were biological siblings. Yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind, but I would say that we had a ton of support. Foster Connect, which was that organization that had partnered with the department to recruit us, supported us incredibly well and walked through each step of the way with us. So we said yes to these 4 kids. And as far as the department was concerned, we were ready to take them because we had 2 empty bedrooms. But we didn't have any stuff at that point to put in those bedrooms. So we reached out to Foster Connect as well as to our community and just said, like, we're bringing home this sibling group of 4 tomorrow and we don't have anything. And it was incredible to just watch God provide over the course of 24 hours. We went from having literally nothing to having like 2 twin beds, 2 cribs, 3 car seats, 2 strollers, 2 high chairs. I mean, a mountain of clothes and toys like piled up in my living room. And I just had to like, okay, God, like you're serious about this. So here we go. And we had to actually go in two cars to pick up the kids because we didn't have a car big enough to fit all of them. We brought them home on a Wednesday and bought a minivan on Saturday.
So, wow.
Yeah.
That is quite the beginning. That's quite the beginning. What did your family say about all of this?
My parents are believers and they were super supportive. And before we decided to take this sibling group of four, we did all of the biblical things like sought God to counsel and prayed a lot. And every person we sought counsel from was like, four kids is a lot of kids. Like maybe right. you want to start with one or two. And so even my parents who were super supportive of us fostering thought, okay, well, four kids is like a bunch to take at one time. And I thought, well, you're right. But we just really felt like God was calling us to take those specific kids. So
how long did the kids stay with you or are they still with you?
They actually were with us 2 years to the day before their adoption was final. So we did end up adopting our very first placement. Wow. So we thought when we went into foster care that we would like foster for a little while and then kids would reunify and we'd have a little bit of time just us and then we'd foster some more and kids would reunify. And that was not the plan that God had. So they've been with us almost 10 years.
And during that time, you also added a biological child. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep. So we had fostered them about 15 months before our first biological son was born. And then once their adoption was final, we felt like we were going to transition a little bit. And I had this grand plan that because I was a stay-at-home mom of five, that I was going to mentor teen moms. So our next foster placement was a 15-year-old girl, and she had an 8-month-old baby. And when she was placed with us, we were told that she was a runner and to not expect for her to be with us more than 2 weeks. And so to me, that was a challenge. Like, okay, I'm going to adopt this girl if they think she's not going to be with me for more than 2 weeks. And that actually was an incredibly challenging placement. She ended up being with us for about 9 weeks before she ran away. But we did realize through that process that our oldest son really identified himself as the oldest child. And so moving forward, we chose to keep our family in birth order.
That's a great idea.
Our next foster placement after that was a newborn baby. So we brought home a 13-day-old drug exposed baby from the hospital. And again, the goal was reunification. The first 3 months with her were incredibly challenging. She detoxed on methadone the first 3 months that she was with us. They would step down her dose every 5 days. And although we had not planned on having any more biological children, I found out I was pregnant about a week after we brought her home. So by the time we hit our third wedding anniversary, we had 7 children. And Sophie ended up being with us, right? God is funny.
Yes, I love it.
Sophie ended up being with us 2.5 years and we ended up adopting her. So then at that point, we had 7 kids under 9 and we decided to close our foster license. I felt like I was pretty mentally, emotionally capped out. But we felt like the call to be involved in foster care and adoption on our lives had not gone away. So even though we stopped personally fostering at that point, that was when God really transitioned our focus to trying to recruit and then support as many godly foster families as possible.
And so you have a really unique relationship with your Department of Family and Children's Services there. And you've kind of been able to trail the path there for some other churches to step out and you know, share your facilities and that sort of thing. So tell me how that relationship got started and what you've seen the Lord do between your church and your local DFACS office.
Yes. So when we fostered, we had incredibly close relationships with our caseworkers and our licensing workers and our CASA workers and our CAP attorneys and all these different entities that were on our case. We tried to maintain a very healthy relationship with them. And so moving forward, even once our adoptions were final, we maintained that relationship. And so once Hope Church, which is where we attend, started really wanting to focus on foster care in our city, I was able to easily go to the Department of Family Services and say, hey, our church is really wanting to step up to the plate and to come alongside you and to support you as an organization.
That's fantastic.
And just try to have a healthy partnership. So they were completely excited and on board because the desperate need for foster parents in Las Vegas has not gone away. It's probably just as dire as it was 10 years ago. So we had a couple of meetings with all of the head licensing workers and managers of the department and just sat down and said, okay, how can we serve you best as a church? And so what we have done is the same 10-week classes that they teach on their campus at the county building, we've brought those facilitators to our church campus. So it's probably about 20 miles closer to anyone that lives in the south end of Las Vegas, as well as we as a church provide free childcare. So we tried to look at what was holding godly families back from being able to foster.
Right.
And because Las Vegas is such a transient town, many families here don't have grandparents mm-hmm. or aunts and uncles that they could drop their biological children off for 5 hours once a week for 10 weeks in a row. And know that their biological children were in a safe place that they didn't have to pay for the duration of those classes. So we thought, well, if we could eliminate that one hurdle, that would be leverage for more families to be able to foster. So we are about to finish our second round of classes. We have our third round scheduled for April. So we've graduated close to 45 families.
That's incredible.
Through our church. Yeah. And I would say probably half of those attend Hope Church. I would say about 30% of those attend other community churches in our area. And then another percentage of them are just people from our community that have said, can we take advantage of this? So it's actually been a really great partnership, not only with our church and other churches, but with the lost, because they're coming mm-hmm. to a church campus once right. a week and then maintaining that relationship to get further support even once they've graduated the classes. So our support group offers, our support group is called Fostering Hope, and we have a twice a month support group that meets on our church campus that provides childcare. And it's just a safe place to be able to just let it all out and say like what you're struggling through as a foster or an adoptive parent. And I mean, you know, this as an adoptive parent, there are struggles that you go through,
right?
That someone that only has biological children just can't understand mm-hmm. as much as they want to empathize with you. Unless you've been there, it's just not something that you can even start to give advice on. So it has been a really great place for people to come and just to almost emotionally unload and say like all these things that they're struggling with. And then for us as a group to be able to sit there and say, I've went through this exact same thing. And so 2 hours later, after we've prayed and everyone has cried a lot, you know, you walk away feeling like, okay, I'm not the only one. And like, it's going to be okay. And I'm going to be able to make it till, you know, tomorrow. And that has been huge. We have an online community as well that is a secret closed group that it's only the people that have graduated through the classes at our church.
Oh, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's been awesome to see the people that graduated the first class now coming alongside the people that are graduating the second class and saying, look, I know I'm only 3 months ahead of you, but we tried this. And I know the first visit is scary, but we did this. And now we're building a great relationship with the birth mom. And wow. She's come to church with us. And it's like just this like ripple effect of, it was a couple named Ray and Claire Biggerstaff that first came to Las Vegas like 13 years ago and felt like God was really calling them to really get involved in foster care and orphan ministry in Las Vegas. And so they started that original nonprofit Foster Connect, which is how John and I got recruited. And so to see like their faithfulness of just saying yes to coming to a city where they knew no one, and how all these years later, like God is just opening so many doors. And it's been incredible to have Hope as a platform to have the resources and the ability to be able to say, you know, look, you can come here and our church is going to cover the cost of childcare mm-hmm. and provide a space. And so it has eliminated a lot of obstacles that I think we struggled with for quite a few years, trying to figure out how we could best serve these families without many resources. And so they've been able to come alongside us and provide those. So it's been awesome.
So your leadership at the top at Hope sounds incredibly supportive.
Yes, they really are. And I would say that even they've been supportive of my husband and I personally from the beginning. I could just tell you one story where we brought home these four kids. My mom is from England, and my mom and dad and sisters were actually back home visiting family when we brought home the sibling group of four. And John had just started his dream career job, which took him out of town for 2 weeks. Mm. And so I was sitting at home with these four kids, like, I don't even know how to be a mom. This is crazy. And I had really just gotten to like my wit's end where I was like, Jesus, I need something because I'm not I don't know how I'm going to make it even till tomorrow. And I had gone to check the mail, and there was an anonymous card from the prayer team at our church. Oh. And it's going to make me cry. It was actually the exact verse that you said when we started this about Jeremiah 29:11.
Wow.
And knowing that, okay, God, this might be really, really hard, but that doesn't change the fact that it's what you've called me to do. And because it's what you've called me to do and I'm being obedient, like, you're going to put those things in place to help me survive, essentially. Mm-hmm. So there have been so many just small moments like that where Jesus has just met me, where I felt like, Lord, this is really, really hard. Right. Like, there's nothing about foster care or adoption that's easy. But every time I feel like, okay, I can't possibly take one more step, someone is there to come alongside me and, you know, be like, it's okay, we got this, we're in it together. And, you know, there's times where I feel like for some of my kids that really struggle, that their relief might not come until heaven. And that as a mom is a really hard thing to accept, but knowing that God has rescued them from a life where a compassionate mom would not have been an option.
Right.
And to say that I get it right is really a disservice. I get it wrong more than I get it right. But just being able to display forgiveness to my kids and to have them show me that same forgiveness when I blow it is huge. So
I remember my kids were little, and we had the three younger, Carly, and we were bringing home, you know, adding to the nest and the days of being overwhelmed. And we started something in our home that helped me so much, is that, you know, I'm always forgiving the kids of things, you know, Mom, I'm sorry, no big deal. But I started saying to my kids, will you forgive me? Mom, I kind of was mom on a broom for a minute. Would you forgive me? And man, it just brought so much love and peace and settling to our home, you know, and it just really helped. Didn't matter, adopted, biological kids, foster kids. But when you say to a child, will you forgive me? Mom's struggling today. And so I just think that's I was so glad that Kevin brought that to our home and brought that in. It just helped me so much, you know, because I needed grace as well. That is one thing I've really learned through this journey of adoption and foster care, is that, as Tara always says, she's taught me this over and over, it is a sanctification process for mom and dad.
That is exactly true. But I think it also gives our children that come from hard places the freedom to say, I don't have to live up to perfection.
Yes.
That it's okay, I mess up, and I'm still going to be loved, and I'm still going to be pursued. And we have to say that to our kids who've been home a much longer time now, to say on the days that are really hard, no matter what, I'm always going to pursue you.
Right. Well, I'd like to back up just a little, Carly, too, and talk about, you just have such a unique relationship with the state. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people struggle, a lot of ministries, our churchmen struggle with doing that correctly. Tara and I happened to be blessed with a good relationship with that as well, but we worked at it.
Right.
And they reciprocated, so that was a blessing. But how do you nurture, what suggestions you would give to nurture that relationship with your local Department of Family and Children's Services?
I would say one thing is to not grow weary. There is, like you just said, it takes a lot of work. And I think a part of that is that there have been many people that have really great intentions that try to partner with the department, and it fizzles out because the department moves so slow.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So by the time the county is on board with whatever your idea was, the organization or the church has almost moved on to the next thing.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So we have had to really keep on them, not in a negative way, not in a nagging way, but in an encouraging way. Like, we're still here. This is still something we want to pursue. And really trying our best to make them feel appreciated. I don't know how it is with you guys, but our county workers are way overworked. Mm-hmm. Their caseloads are massive. The things they're trying to do are almost like climbing mountaintops on their own. So as much as they're grateful for the assistance of the church, there's not any one person at the department that can say, oh yeah, let's do this, and then just runs and does it. There's like all these layers of government that you've got to get through first to get approval and to get this and to get that. And so we've done just small things like sending them thank you cards or giving them a gift card to a local coffee shop to say like, hey, we appreciate the work that you're doing and we're thankful for this partnership. And we've kind of buttered them up a little bit.
Right. It works.
For lack of a better
word. And they deserve it. I mean, yes, they have such a hard job. They deserve it. And they're often forgotten.
I would agree with that. Yeah. And they feel like, okay, these people are really going to do what they said they're going to do. And so I think building up to us hosting them for the first time, I think there was a lot of nerves on their end that I think we were able to put to rest by showing up and doing what we said we were going to do. So if you were to go to the county building, you're in a stale, cold room and you take your classes and then you leave. So we were like, how can we make this the best experience for everyone involved? So myself or a couple other members from my leadership team, we get there an hour before the class starts. We prep coffee and there's cold drinks, there's iced tea and juices, and we get the room set up and we write them encouraging notes on the board and just really small things, but things that have made it to where now for our third round of classes, the county workers are fighting over who gets to come facilitate that class.
I love that.
So it's just been something where we've really had to cultivate it and to hold it very carefully because we don't want to do anything to damage that relationship.
Oh, absolutely not. And then bringing in the church and the unchurched onto your campus.
Because it makes it the church itself seem less daunting to those who are not attenders.
It really breaks down barriers. Yeah, absolutely. And so how have you seen those families, say you have 20 go through a class together, maybe eight are from Hope and 12 are just from the community. How have you seen them care for one another?
I think, well, not that this is something to brag about. It shows the desperation of our city. But they have started placing children, foster placements, with foster parents after class five. So when they're only five classes into this 10-week course, they feel like, okay, we've vetted you enough. We've done enough of a home inspection where you're definitely not licensed yet, but we need to start placing kids in your home. So we've gathered like a group of people from our church who have said like, I want to be involved in foster care, but I'm not in a place right now where I can foster. So we've said, awesome. There's 10,000 other things you can do.
Exactly.
So when these people, even these unchurched people, have brought home a foster placement 5 weeks in, we've set up meal deliveries for them for the first 2 weeks as they transition. Or we've said, okay, we have one of the ladies on our leadership team has given us her garage basically to use as a storage facility. And so we have tubs and tubs of clothing and toys and baby items. And so we're able to say, look, you know, you have access to all of these things. And so I think that even for the unchurched people, that it softened their heart, that they're getting the same love and support from the church that our church members are getting. And then also to see within the group, someone who brought home a placement maybe at week five, encourage someone that's about to bring home a placement at week six and really just like walk alongside them and build friendships where I think those people would not have ever stepped foot on a church campus, let alone become close friends with a believer.
What a beautiful picture of the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Carly, thank you for sharing your story today and what just the incredible plan that God's called John and you to. I know sometimes a beautiful life is not always, it's pretty messy sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
I know, but he does give us a hope and a future, and his plan is to prosper us, and we're just so grateful that you were able to share with us today and, just be transparent and to share the pretty and the hard and the times when you just really have to bow your face before the Lord and seek his strength.
Yeah. There are a lot of times like that.
It's been a pleasure to have you today, Carly. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
May is National Foster Care Month. As the body of Christ, we each have a part to play in supporting the lives of children and youth in foster care. For more information about foster care and supporting foster families, go to sendrelief.org.